defensively.
Just let me catch my breath first.
39. Visions of the Occult. A reinforced steel door gave the first indication that the abandoned church was not what it seemed. The half-dozen men on guard outside, smoking and bickering, were a more obvious second. Their heads were shaved, their faces and skulls covered with tattoos. Devil horns on foreheads, the numbers 1 and 3 written in Roman numerals rouging each cheek. Dots in a triangle at the corner of the eye, showing the 3 destinations for Mara Salvatrucha members after they're recruited. Hospital, prison, or grave. To a 1, the men wore Nike Cortez sneakers, blue and white for the flag of their home country. 1 shirtless bruiser had the monkeys of lore inked across his torso. See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. Evan walked past on the far side of the street, then cut around the block and took his bearings. The church was north of Pico along the 110 freeway, surrounded by buildings in steep decline. A textile plant, a bodega with plywood replacing the glass of 1 front window. Graffiti everywhere, covering dumpsters, parked cars, walls. On the corner a shrine of flower wreaths and sanctuary candles remembered a young boy who peered out of a framed school picture with bright, eager-to-please eyes. A street vendor hawked knockoff Nikes on a ratty bedspread, the swooshes positioned suspiciously low. They, too, were blue and white Cortezes, fan paraphernalia for residents who wanted to be seen rooting for the home team. Evan headed up an alley and scaled a fire escape ladder to the roof of a crack house. He walked across the rotting shingles toward the spire rising from the neighboring building and crouched by the rusted rain gutter, peering through a shattered stained glass window into the church below. The pews had been shoved aside, gang members congregating in the nave, a pistol on every hip, submachine guns leaning in the corners at the ready. They weren't a gang. They were an army. The men exchanged rolls of cash, sorted baggies of white powder, collected from street-worn hookers. Electronic scales topped table after table like sewing machines in a sweatshop. Pallets of boxed electronics lined the far wall, fronted with heaps of stolen designer clothes. A hive, buzzing with enterprise. Evan searched the milling crowd for Javier. The tattoos were overwhelming. Pentagrams and names of the dear departed. Crossbones, grenades, dice, daggers, machetes. And words. Words in place of eyebrows, blue letters staining lips, nicknames rendered across throats in Old English letters. Other tattoos coded for crimes the men had committed. Rape, murder, kidnapping. Their rap sheets, inked right on their faces. Javier was nowhere to be seen. A broad-chested man descended from the sanctuary, and the body language of the others changed. Everyone quieted down, their focus drawn. The man had MS in a gothic font on his forehead, showing him to be a high-ranking member. It was an honor to display the gang's initials above the shoulders. But that wasn't what drew Evan's attention first. It was his eyes. They were solid black. For the first time in a long time, leaning over the eaves of the crack house, Evan felt a chill. It took him a moment to recalibrate, to pull himself out of visions of the occult. The man had tattooed the whites of his eyes. He had a lean, lupine face, a crucifix running down the bridge of his nose, unfolding its wings across his cheeks. Twinned rows of metal studs decorated his cheeks, and his lower lip bore shark bites, double hoop piercings on either side. Block letters spelling Freeway banded his chin like a drooled spill of blood. Freeway hugged one of his lieutenants, a hand clasp to shoulder bump, and headed out. The army parted for him. Benito's words came back to Evan. They are the people you would least want to anger in the entire world. And he shivered against the wind. Walking along the edge of the roof, Evan watched Freeway clang out through the steel door. The guards quieted instantly and stepped aside. Evan mirrored Freeway's movement from above, walking along the rim of the roof as Freeway turned the corner. A few men threw heavy metal devil's head signs at him from the alleys, their fingers forming an inverted M for the gang name. Freeway did not return the signs. When passers-by saw him walking, they averted their eyes and stepped off the sidewalk into the gutter to let him pass. Still no sign of Javier. Freeway entered the bodega. Through the remaining window, Evan saw the store owner stiffen. He scurried over and turned the sign on the front door to closed. Freeway walked through the aisles, grabbing items off shelves, and disappeared into a back courtyard without paying. The owner waited a few moments, catching his breath, and then followed. Evan's roam zone rang, the piercing sound startling him. He hadn't noticed how tense he'd grown while watching the gang leader. The burner cell's number registered in the roam zone's caller ID. Evan answered, "Go." Joey said, "I cracked it." Evan took in a breath of crisp rooftop air.
"You'd better get over here," she said. "It's worse than we thought."
40. Enhanced Interrogation. Candy pulled the Audi through the side gate, released Tim Draker from the trunk, and marched him in through the rear door. She stayed 5 feet behind him, pistol aimed at the back of his head. She'd zip-tied his hands at the small of his back, but you couldn't be too cautious. Not with an orphan. Draker stepped into the living room, blinking as his eyes adjusted to the gloom. Mattresses covered the windows and walls, soundproofing the space. An array of implements were spread out on a drop-cloth. Across the room stood Charles Van Sciver, his log-thick arms crossed. Candy couldn't help but smirk a bit when she saw Draker sag at the sight of him, as if someone had put slack in the line. Van Sciver stared over the ledge of his arms, one eye sharp and focused, the other dilated, a dark orb. "Let me tell you what we know," he said. "Jack Johns has long been aware of the directive from above to neutralize washouts, dissenters, orphans who tested high risk for defiance. But the Shadow File? He knew of its existence before I did, and he knew it was only a matter of time before I got my hands on it. So he reached out to anyone he could and hid those people any way he knew how. He got to a few before we got to him. You were one of them. After you left the program, he helped you hide. He also took care of the asset you'd recruited for me. David Smith, 12 years old. Now 13. Van Sciver paused, but Orphanel gave no reaction. At the mention of the boy, Candy felt cool air across the back of her neck. An uncomfortable sensation. Like when she thought about that alley outside Sevastopol, Halya Bardaxia with her baby giraffe legs and that almond-shaped face. East Slavic through and through, beautiful and alluring, cheaply had and cheaply dispatched, after she'd been stabbed in the neck and dumped in the back of the car. She was still alive, rattling against the hatch as she bled out. Van Sciver took a step toward Draker. "We know Jack hid the boy here in Richmond. We know that you helped him before you went to ground. I want to know where the boy is." Draker said, "Even if I did know anything about this, why would you want the boy? You think he can lead you to X?" "No," Van Sciver said. "I think he can bring X to me." Draker said, "I don't know anything about this." "Is that so?" Van Sciver said. The men regarded each other solemnly. Then Van Sciver took a step back and tapped on the wall lightly with his knuckles. A moment later, Thornhill entered from the next room. He was holding the turkey baster. He walked a casual arc in front of Van Sciver. "Enhanced interrogation," Thornhill said, with that broad, easygoing grin. "It's such a well-considered term. Gotta hand it to the agency. They do know their marketing." He gazed into the middle distance, tapping the baster in his palm. "You know another one I like? Rectal rehydration. It sounds so therapeutic. His stare lowered. When your intestines are all swollen up with fluid and you get a steel-toed boot in the gut, do you have any idea how much it hurts? Draker said, I do. That's just the start, Vanskyver said. Have a look around. Keeping her gun raised, Candy watched Draker take in the items arrayed on the floor. There were padlocks and plywood, nylon ropes and boards of various lengths, a decline bench and jugs of water, mattresses and drop cloths, duct tape, and a folding metal chair. A sheen of perspiration covered his face now, and it was no longer a fake addict sweat. He lifted his head again, set his jaw. He said, Let's get to it then. 41. Borrowed Time. Joey chewed her thumbnail, leaning over Evan's shoulder as he sat before the Dell laptop, staring at a list. 5 names. One of them was Joey Morales. Morales. All this time he didn't know her last name. He'd been unable even to get her full first name out of her. The hillside crowded the back windows of the safe house, shadows making the interior dismal. That ever-present moisture had taken hold in the trapped air, turning the place dank. It smelled of microwaved food and girls' deodorant. Evan ran his eyes across the screen once again. So much encryption, Evan said, for 5 names. She paused from chewing her thumbnail. Not just 5 names. It's a list of people in the program who were associated with Jack in some way. Look. She shouldered him aside, taking over the keyboard. When she hovered the cursor above the top name, a hidden file appeared. She clicked it, and a host of images proliferated. This guy? Jim Harville? He was Orphan Jay. One of the original guys. Jack was his handler way back when. It says it was Jack's first program assignment. Evan scanned the files. How the hell did Vanskyver get his hands on this? This is intel that isn't supposed to exist. He scrolled down the page. And it's from channels outside the Orphan program. Look here. See, this is NSA CSS coding. What does that mean? It means someone else in the government is watching Vanskyver and the program, keeping tabs. Vanskyver didn't oversee this intel collection, and he doesn't control it. Well, Joey said, till he got control of it. Dread crept into Evan's stomach, digging in its nails. Vanskyver's cryptic comments looped through his head once again. You have no idea, do you? How high it goes. You still think it's about me and you. Evan said, What happened to Orphan Jay? They caught up to him in Venice. She brought up a crime scene photo of a man lying in a flooded piazza, the back of his head blown off. Another red spot bloomed below one of his shoulder blades. Blood ribboned the water around him. The picture had been taken moments after he was shot. A cell phone snap. Evan noted the timestamp on the photo. Vanskyver's updating the initial files, building on the intel pieces he got his hands on. He's taken these 5 names and turned them into active hit missions. That's right. Like Orphan C. She brought up a picture of an older man, half in shadow, moving through the concourse of a shopping mall in Homewood, Alabama. He was dressed shabbily, toes showing through one of his sneakers. Now look at this. She'd dug up an article about an unidentified homeless man murdered beneath a freeway ramp in Birmingham. A picture from a local shelter accompanied the article, showing the man at a soup kitchen. Evan sank back in the chair. That's why Jack was in Alabama. He knew this was coming, that this file could leak. And that's why he found me, Joey said, why he moved me to Oregon and hid me. Evan stared at the name. There on the screen, Joey Morales. It's beyond creepy. Joey slid the cursor over her own name, and a surveillance grab from a 7-Eleven security camera popped up, showing her walking through the aisles, baseball hat pulled low. but the angle was sufficient to capture her face. It was dated nearly a year ago, an address listed in Albuquerque. Same faded NSA-CSS stamp at the bottom of the page. "This is from a week after I took off from Vanskyver," Joey said. "But it was enough to get them on my trail. And lead them here." She tapped another link, and zoom lens surveillance photos of the Hillsboro apartment populated the screen. Joey through a rear window, brushing her teeth. Joey shadow boxing, no more than a silhouette in the unlit apartment. Joey in the open doorway, casting a wary eye as she paid for a takeout order. She minimized the windows, exposing a report beneath that listed 63 nodal points of facial recognition and the same Oregon address that Jack had scrawled on his truck window right before he'd been forced aboard that Black Hawk and lifted 16,000-plus feet in the air. "You were right," Joey said. "They had someone sitting on me, waiting for you." Evan looked at the remaining two names. "Tim Draker," he said. "Jack told me about him. Orphanel. He was one of Vanskyver's guys, until they fell out about a year ago. Is he dead, too?" "Probably," she said. Evan put his finger on the trackpad, targeted Draker's name. A streetlight camera had caught him exiting an anonymous drug rehab center in Baltimore 10 months ago. The imagery featured the NSA-CSS stamp. A newer surveillance photo caught Draker smoking outside a facility in Bethesda, Maryland. It was dated November 28th, 2 days ago, the timestamp showing 8:37 p.m., minutes before Evan had blasted through the door of the pest control shop, killed everyone inside, and taken the laptop. Vanskyver's update must have just come in. This second photo had no stamp or coding of any kind. "The NSA intel put Vanskyver on the trail of drug treatment places," Joey said. "From there, it was only a matter of time." Evan stared at the date on that surveillance photo, and knew in his gut that Draker was lost. "Which means that we're down to one little Indian," Joey said. Evan stared at the last name, David Smith, moved his fingertip a few inches. The ghost file opened. A photo of a 12-year-old boy, a birth certificate, a file painting a familiar story, various foster homes in various poverty-stricken counties. And then it showed a recruitment report from 2 years ago, listing Tim Draker as David's handler. Evan looked for more information, but there wasn't any to be had. "That's it?"
"That's it."
"Won't Vanskyver have found him by now?" "There are 33,637 people named David Smith in the country," Joey said. "And believe me, with how well Jack's been stashing people, the kid ain't using that name anymore." She jabbed a finger at the screen. "These people are hidden as well as it is possible to hide someone. Everything I know. Hell, everything you know about being invisible, we learned from Jack. So I think Vanskyver's still searching for this kid. I think he's chasing him down now. And if we don't find him first, he's going to kill the kid like he killed everyone else." Evan stood up, laced his hands at the back of his neck, and breathed. "All this..." Joey completed the thought. "All this is because of you." He looked at her. "Vanskyver's killing his way to you right now," she said. "All of us. These five names and however many more Vanskyver doesn't have yet. We're all on borrowed time." "How do we help that kid?" Evan said. "We find him. We can't compete with Vanskyver's resources. I have access to databases, but he's at a whole other level."
"You're right."
Joey was chewing her thumb again, drifting behind the table, her eyes intense.
"When it comes to David Smith, we have an absence of data."
"Right," Evan said. "How do you look for an absence of data?"
"Deep learning software," she said. "Believe me, that's what Vanskyver's using."
She looked over at Evan, saw that he wasn't following. "It's machine learning using advanced mathematics," she said. "That doesn't help." She leaned over the table, peering at him from above the laptop screen. "It finds patterns you don't even know you're looking for. She took another turn around the table, passing behind Evan. Between the name David Smith, potential fake names befitting a 13-year-old white kid, facial characteristics, his birth certificate information, physical developmental changes, purchase patterns for foster kids fitting his analytics, past locations, receipts, meds, and thousands of other factors we're not aware of but can be extrapolated from on the basis of that thin file. She jabbed a finger at the screen. Let's say that there are 5 billion combinations of data. Being conservative. Conservative. Yes. Without a machine learning system, it would be impossible to correlate all that data, let alone zero in on David Smith under his new name in his new hiding place. Okay, Evan said. So what's the best way for us to do that? She paused long enough to flick a smile his way. Someone who knows where he is. And a hammer, Evan said. He stood up. Seriously, Joey. Can we break into somewhere that has these capabilities and run the data?
No. This kind of processing takes time. Days, even.
What equipment do we need? He said. A pile of hardware, she said. Mutual exasperation had given the discussion the tenor of an argument. And like, say, a shit ton of common graphics processing unit chips. The mathematics involved in machine learning take advantage of the massive parallelism of the thousands of cores in those things. We'd need giant-ass GPU arrays, computer towers stuffed full of graphics cards, linked together with a high-speed InfiniBand network running at 80 gigabytes and... She stopped, looked at him. More stuff I'd explain to you if I thought you could understand. So how do we do that? Right now. Raid the computer graphics lab building at Pixar. She studied his expression. Joking. Frustration mounting, he drifted over and leaned against the couch. The cushions and pillows had been rearranged for her to sleep there, a t-shirt balled up for a pillow. He stared across at an old-school photograph of David Smith on the screen. He wore a dated bowl cut and a collared three-button shirt with a frayed shoulder. Lank blonde hair with a cowlick parting his bangs, hazel eyes, pleasingly even features. His gaze was lifted from the camera, as if the photographer's last directive had caught him off guard. He looked lost. They always did. I'm not gonna let Van Sciver get to that kid, Evan said. So give me an answer for how to find you what you need to figure this out.
It's complex shit, X, she said.
It's not like we can just drive through a Best Buy. Your average person doesn't have... She stopped, mouth slightly ajar. She bowed her head, pinched her eyes at the bridge of her nose. Joey, don't talk. Joey, she held up a hand. He silenced. She stayed that way for 30 seconds. 30 seconds is longer than it sounds. And then, with her face still buried in her hand, she said...
Bitcoin mining.
What?
You do Bitcoin mining.
She lowered her hand, and her face held something more than joy. It held triumph. No government regulation. No oversight. Yes. Which means you have a TU rack mount computer bay. Two of them. Her eyes were shining.
I could kiss you.
Figuratively. Each rack has 16 graphics cards. At 4 chips per card and 2,048 cores per chip, that gives us 8,192 graphics cores per card. We have 32 cards, which makes... She closed her eyes again, her lips twitching.
262,144 graphics cores.
She looked up.
That's a lot of horsepower.
So I can just use my Bitcoin mining setup? No. Her irritation flared again. Everything has to be reconfigured. Evan looked at the Snickers wrapper on the kitchen counter, the t-shirt pillow on the couch. Pack up your stuff, he said.
What?
Why? I just came up with a new commandment. At this, her eyebrows rose.
A new commandment?
What is it? Don't fall in love with Plan A. 42. Undone by Target. Joey stood in the great room of Evan's penthouse in Castle Heights, staring at the tall ceiling, her mouth gaping. After the places she'd lived, it probably seemed like the Serengeti to her. Watching her, Evan felt discomfort beneath his skin, an awareness of his posture, how he was holding his arms. He could count on his fingers the number of people who had been inside 21A, and not one of them had known Evan's real identity. "By bringing you here, I am giving you my absolute trust," he said. "Trust I have given no one before. Ever." Joey was taking a pass through the kitchen, trickling a finger across the countertops, the island, the Sub-Zero, like a housewife at an open house. But at his words, she paused and looked over at him. The weight of the moment was potent enough that it quieted the air between them. "What if I don't deserve it?" she said. "If you didn't deserve it, I wouldn't give it to you." "This place," she said, "it's like something made up." "What did you expect?" "Judging by your taste in motels and your lovely safehouse decor, I thought you lived in, I don't know, a shoe?"
"A shoe?"
"Yeah. But this is like a Louboutin."
"What's that?"
"A fancy shoe they talk about on TV."
"Oh.
Where do I stay?"
She looked around.
"I guess I could sleep on the dumbbell rack."
He hadn't thought about it.
"There's a couch in the reading loft." "The reading loft?" "Of course."
He pointed at the steel spiral staircase. "Full bathroom, too." She gestured tentatively.
"May I?"
"Yes."
She twisted up the stairs and disappeared. Another human, out of sight, inside his place, doing whatever humans did. He looked over at the vertical garden. It looked back. He wondered if the plants were as uncomfortable as he was. "This might be a very bad idea," he told them. He thought again of David Smith in his frayed school shirt and swallowed his own discomfort. After a moment, Joey came back downstairs, running a hand along the curved handrail as if she wasn't sure it was real. "Is it okay?" he asked.
"It is," she said, "more than okay."
"Let's get to work."
"Okay. Quick question. Where are the extra sheets? And pillows?"
He looked at her.
"Like, for guests?" she said.
"Guests," Evan repeated. He gave a nod. "We'll figure that out later." Joey turned to the east-facing windows, gawking at downtown in the distance. The discreet armor sunshades were raised, the glass tinted. She took a step closer. The entire wall was transparent. At least in one direction. She said, "You can see into so many apartments from here."
Evan said, "Yes." She set her palms against the Lexan pane. He made a note to wipe off the smudges later.
"Did Jack teach you about the Mongo Day?" she asked.
"Genghis Khan's cavalrymen."
"Yeah."
She laughed, her breath clouding the glass.
"He said they were the first elite special operations force. They fought without fear, beyond the limits of the human body. Know how Khan trained those warriors?"
"Built a regimen based on starving wolves."
"Yeah,"
she said. "The hungrier a wolf is, the braver and more ferocious he gets." "You're saying that's what we are?"
"Yes, that's what we are."
"And this place?"
"This place looks like the home of someone who's always hungry."
"For what?"
She looked back at him, her hair flicking over one shoulder. Her hands remained on the window.
"For everything out there."
Evan broke off her stare, heading down the hall to the master suite. "Let's get to work," he said again.
He could hear Joey jogging to catch up. He opened the door and stepped into his bedroom. She crossed the threshold and halted. She said.
Your bed is floating.
Yes.
You have a bed, she said, that floats.
We've covered that.
Why?
Evan blinked at her.
Can we please just get to work?
She looked around.
Where?
When they stepped through the hidden door into the vault, Joey actually gasped. She circled the cramped space, checking the equipment, noting the monitors.
Is this? Am I in? This is heaven.
She picked up Vera 2 in her glass bowl.
Cute.
Put her down.
Her?
Before he could respond, Joey spotted the TU rack mount computer bays and beelined over to them.
Good. Good. This is good.
She checked the setup.
You already have an InfiniBand cable, so you're not entirely useless, but we have to pick up some basic Cat 6 cables.
This is a state-of-the-art system. Why do we need Ethernet cables?
What we're building? It's basically a bunch of graphics cores tied together. We need to hook up the machines, and the best way to do that is using plain old gig Ethernet.
She studied his blank expression.
People today. You know how to work everything, but you don't know how anything works.
She breezed past him, heading out.
Come on, let's go to Target.
Target?
Yeah, we can grab the cables there. Plus I need stuff.
Like what?
She faced him, filling the doorway.
There's no soap, or shampoo, or conditioner, or sheets, or pillows. And I need some other stuff.
I can get it for you.
Girl stuff.
Oh. Target it is, he said.
Red signs blared 50% off discounts. A kid stutter-stepped past, trying on a pair of sneakers, still connected by a plastic loop, while his mom shouted, "How's the toe? Is your heel slipping?" A cluster of girls modeled sunglasses, checking themselves out using their iPhones as mirrors. A stern father was saying, "Read the ingredients. There's no food in food anymore." A husband and wife were having a heated debate over detergent.
No, the lavender scent is the one that gives you the rash.
Evan stood frozen in the wide aisle of the second floor next to Joey. She did a double take at his stunned expression.
Are you okay?
A worker wheeled a pallet piled with jumbo diaper packs, nearly clipping Evan's knee. He swallowed.
I'll wait outside, he said.
Evan stood in the parking structure just past Target's sliding glass doors, breathing the night air, catching his breath. Brimming shopping carts rattled past concrete security posts, shoved by flustered parents in sweatpants. Evan kept his hand near his hidden pistol and his eyes on the circus-like surroundings. Parking disputes proliferated. Car horns blared. Remote-controlled minivan doors wheeled open. By the shopping cart rack, kids fought over coin-operated kiddie rides. Exclamations crowded in on him.
Not gonna buy you a toy every single time we go to the... I was already backing up. I saw the reverse lights before I was past the...
Not the kind your mom uses, thank God. Or the powder room would smell like the potpourri Olympics. And then, mercifully, Joey was there. A few bags dangled from either arm. She was regarding his face with what seemed to be amusement.
Let's go, Evan said.
Aw, you're all uncomfortable-like. That's so cute.
Joey.
Okay, okay.
You got the cable. She smacked her forehead with her palm.
Shoot, I knew I forgot something.
He felt himself blanch.
Really? No.
She smiled that luminous smile.
Of course I have it. Let's get you away from the big, scary discount retailer.
He gritted his teeth and turned for his truck. That's when he saw Mia and Peter climbing out of Mia's Acura.
He stiffened, turned back to Joey.
Her face grew serious.
What's wrong?
She said.
Nothing.
Someone I can't see here. Now, with you. go there. Pretend you're, I don't know, playing on the ride.
Joey took in the coin-operated kiddie rides.
The choo-choo train?
Yes.
I'm 16.
I don't care.
You don't know much about kids, do you?
He put a hand on her side, hustled her toward the front of the store.
Let me help you out, Joey said. I'll just pretend I'm playing on my phone.
Okay, fine. Good. From behind him, he heard Peter's raspy voice.
Evan Smoke!
He turned as Mia and Peter approached. Mia said,
Evan?
Hi.
Wait, I didn't think you knew where Target was.
Let me guess.
There's a sale on vodka.
Just needed some things.
Is that girl with you?
Who? Evan said.
No.
Joey remained immersed in her phone. For all their collective tradecraft, the ruse was paper thin.
Yes, Evan said.
Joey looked up, gave a flat smile.
Mia's head cocked.
Her gaze narrowed. The district attorney gaze.
She's sort of my niece, Evan said.
Staying with me a while.
She needed some,
he winced,
girl things.
I thought you didn't have any family.
She's the closest to it, I guess. Kind of a second cousin's kid. Through a marriage. But then her parents died. Sort of a thing.
He took a deep breath, let it burn in his lungs. All his impeccable training, living his cover, becoming his legend. Never a skip, a stutter, a false move. And here he was, undone by Target.
It's a weird situation, he conceded.
Indeed.
Mia's glare softened only when she looked over at Joey.
Hi, honey. I'm Mia.
Joey came over and shook her hand.
Joey.
Super cool girl name, Peter said.
Mia's ringtone sounded, the theme to Jaws, which signaled the call from her office. She said,
Give me a sec,
and stepped away to answer. Peter blinked up at Joey and Evan.
I was in class today, and Zachary had an egg salad sandwich, and he took it out right before lunch, and it totally smelled like someone farted, and it was on my side of the classroom, so everyone was looking at me. And what am I going to say? Like, I didn't fart? I mean, who believes that?
Joey looked over at Evan.
Does it have an off button?
Standing a few paces away, Mia paused from her call to glance across at Evan, her displeasure clear.
Was she mad at him for having a sort of niece? For being at Target? For not introducing her to Joey right away?
Peter had cornered Joey against the choo-choo ride.
What's your favorite color?
Matte black, Joey said.
What do you like to play?
I don't.
What do you like to play with?
The entrails of children.
What's an entrails?
Guts.
Really?
Yes.
Peter processed this behind his charcoal eyes.
Really they're the guts? Or really that's what you like to play with?
Evan cleared his throat. Time we get going. Mia wrapped up her phone call and stepped back over, ruffling Peter's hair.
Mom, Peter said, Evan Smoke's niece person is awesome.
I'm sure she is, Mia said. It was nice to meet you, sweetheart.
She shot Evan a look that seemed to code for murderous rage, put her arm around Peter's shoulders, and disappeared through the automated glass doors. Evan exhaled a breath he hadn't known he was holding.
Well played, Joey said. Orphan X.
Evan started for his truck, not caring if she kept up. 43. Grown Man Problems. Evan crouched gargoyle still at the edge of the crack house roof, peering through the shattered stained glass window into the church next door. Freeway sat on the carpeted steps leading to the altar, a king on his throne. A series of kids entered, each slinging a giant zippered bag at his feet.
They looked no older than Evan had been when he was taken from the Pride House group home. Indoctrination. Best started early. The boys entered the church with swagger, but all signs of confidence evaporated by the time they reached the altar. They kept their heads lowered, afraid to meet Freeway's stare. It was a hard stare to meet. He cast his solid black eyes over his spoils, giving a faint nod to dismiss each child in turn. Evan scanned the other gang members clustered in groups around the tipped-over pews, searching for Benito's son. But just like this morning, there was no sign of Javier. Evan had left Joey in the vault, hard at work reassembling his hardware. The thought of her in his sanctuary unattended, pulling cords and handling his possessions, caused a discomfort that was physical, insects running beneath his skin. He couldn't think about it right now and keep his focus. And given that he was surveilling the deadliest gang in the world, he needed to keep his focus. A commotion at the front door drew his attention. A group of women were corralled into the vestibule. Bright makeup, torn stockings, stiff hair. One was missing the heel on one of her red pumps. Evan was surprised to see that the men who had brought them were not yet visibly tattooed. Lowly initiates, given the lowly task of gathering the street girls. As the newcomers shuffled through the sporadic falls of light from the overheads, Evan caught a glimpse of a young man in the back. Javier. He helped herd the women through the nave toward the altar. He wore a flannel shirt with the sleeves ripped off, the gym-toned muscles of his shoulders rippling. The women rotated before Freeway, handing over wads of crumpled cash that he eyed and then handed to one of his lieutenants. None of the women met Freeway's eyes. Several seemed to hold their breath until they scurried away to gather by the bags of stolen goods. The last woman in the group, the one with the broken heel, stepped forward and offered up a few tattered bills. Freeway examined them, clearly unimpressed, then let them fall to the floor. He stood up. The effect was momentous. All the gang members went on point. The woman started trembling, shaking her head. Evan couldn't hear her beg, but he knew that she was. Freeway gripped her chin, squeezing her cheeks. He flicked out a straight razor, which gleamed in the low lights from the altar. She cowered, her back to Evan, blocking his view. Freeway towered over her. Evan saw his hand rise and move across her face, two strokes, each punctuated with an artistic flare of the wrist. Her shriek was clear, even above the wind rushing over the rooftop. Evan moved his gaze away from Freeway and the woman, finding Javier. Benito's son stood in the half-shadows to the side of the altar. The other gang members looked on with reverence, but Javier's arms were crossed uncomfortably. His face was pale, blood draining away, and his blink ratio had picked up, signs of an anxiety reaction. Freeway flung the woman aside. She landed on her belly with her torso twisted, bringing her face into view. And Evan saw the damage inflicted on it. Matching slashes across both cheekbones, red streaming like war paint. Freeway hadn't just punished her. He'd marked her for life. She sat on the floor, hands cupping her face, blood spilling through her fingers. All the gang members were watching Freeway. Except Javier. He watched the woman. Noteworthy. Freeway dismissed his men with a flick of his fingers and headed back to the sanctuary to attend to other business. They streamed out. Javier got halfway to the door, then paused and looked back at the woman on her knees before the altar. His jaw shifted with discomfort. He looked torn. One of the other initiates said something to him, and he snapped to, exiting the church. Evan watched the woman unsteadily find her feet. The other women finally broke out of their paralyzed trance by the bags of stolen goods and rushed to her. The injured woman collapsed into their embrace. They helped her out a side door. Evan backed away from the edge of the roof. He caught up to Javier 4 blocks north as he said goodbye to 2 fellow initiates at a street corner. Javier peeled off, heading up a dark block alone, ignoring the invitations of the street girls.
"Hey, big time. Wanna get warm?"
Evan shadowed him, keeping a half block back. After a quarter mile, Javier cut up the stairs of a dilapidated house that had been diced into a fourplex. From across the street, Evan waited and watched. Most of the windows of the apartment building behind him were open, banda radio music and the smell of charred meat streaming out. After a moment, a light clicked on in a window on the fourplex's 2nd floor. Evan waited as a lowrider scraped past, and then he crossed the street. The front door's lock was a joke, the metal guard bent back from previous B&Es. Evan pulled out his fake driver's license, used the edge to slide the turtle head of the latch bolt level with the plate, and eased the door open. He took the stairs up to a tiny entry between 2 facing doors. The floorboards, though battered, looked to be oak, probably the surviving section of a study from before the house had been carved up. He rapped on the door to the left. Footsteps. The peephole darkened.
"Who the hell are you?"
"Your father sent me."
"Go away. You're gonna get yourself hurt."
"Open the door."
"You threatening me, fool? Do you have any idea who the fuck I am?"
"Why don't you open the door and show me?" The door ripped open. Javier stood there holding a crappy .22 sideways, like a music video gangster. His head was drawn back, chin tilted up. Evan stood there staring at him over the barrel. Javier cleared his throat, then cleared it again. Apparently the gun was not having the effect he'd hoped. "Your throat's dry," Evan said.
"What?"
"Because you're scared. Adrenaline's pumping. It acts like an antihistamine. Lessens the production of saliva." Javier stuck the muzzle in Evan's face. Evan regarded it, a few inches before his nose. "You're holding your weapons sideways."
"I know how to hold my goddamn—"
Evan's hands blurred. He cranked Javier's arm to the side, snatched the .22 neatly from his grasp, and stripped the gun. Pieces rained down on the floor. Slide, barrel, operating spring, magazine, frame. Javier stared at his empty hand, the red streak on his forearm, his dissected gun littering the floor around his Nikes. "Step inside," Evan said. Javier stepped inside. Evan followed, sweeping the remains of the gun with his boot, and closed the door behind him. It was a run-down place, sleeping bag on the floor, flat-screen TV tilted against the sheetrock, floor strewn with dirty clothes. An add-on kitchenette counter bulged out one wall, hot plate, microwave, chipped sink. An exposed snarl of plumbing hung beneath the counter like a tangle of intestines. "Life's not fair," Evan said. "Your mom died. You pulled a dumb move and joined a gang. The wrong gang. I think you're scared. I think you're in over your head, and you don't know how to get out." The sleeveless flannel bulged across Javier's chest. Veins wiggled through his biceps. He was a big kid.
"You don't know nothing about me, baboso.
You sure you want me to work this hard to like you?
I didn't ask you to come here."
"No, your father did."
"That old man don't know shit."
Evan cuffed him, an open-handed slap upside the head. The sound rang off the cracked drywall. When Javier pulled his face back to center, his cheek bore the mark of Evan's palm. "Make whatever choices you want to fuck up your life," Evan said, "but don't disrespect that man." Javier touched his fingertips to his cheek. Down near the elbow, his forearm had a tattoo so fresh it was still scabbed up. An elaborate M. The beginning of Mara Salvatrucha. He stared at Evan, and then he nodded.
"Okay."
"We both know you're not a killer," Evan said. "But they're gonna make you one." Javier's face had softened, his cheeks full. his eyes as clear as in that photograph Benito had shown Evan. He looked much younger than 24.
"I know," he said.
Evan recalled the tremble in Benito's voice when he discussed his son. This boy he'd taught to put on socks, ride a bike, throw a baseball. Countless hours of loving attention, late nights and early mornings. And then your son winds up here, with grown man problems. And you, the father who once held the answers to the universe, you're helpless. A memory flash penetrated Evan's thoughts. Jack squinting into a handheld camera at 16,000 feet, wind whipping his hair. Evan banished the image.
"I am out of time," Javier said. "I swore the oath."
He held up his arm, showed the tattooed M at his elbow.
"It's written on my flesh. Know why they do that?"
"It's good business," Evan said. "Once you're marked, you can't ever join another gang. They own you, which means they can treat you however they want, and you can never leave." Javier looked confused at that.
"It's to show allegiance. For life. Get it?"
"Nothing is for life. We can remake ourselves in any image we want. One choice at a time."
"I'm out of choices."
"We're never out of choices."
"Know what their motto is? Mata, viola, controla."
Javier snarled the words, suddenly the raw-boned gang member again.
"Kill. Rape. Control."
"Their motto," Evan said.
"What?"
"You said their motto, not our motto."
"I already robbed a store. I stole stuff from a truck. They make me collect from the putas. I brought one in today and she got her face cut open."
Javier put his hand over his mouth, squeezed his lips.
"I'm already one of them."
"Does anyone beyond this chapter know about you?"
"No. I'm just getting jumped in."
"No one back in El Salvador?" Javier's eyes shone with fear.
"No."
"You've got one chance to get out." Javier paced a tight circle by the kitchenette, came back around to face Evan.
"Why do you care?"
"I got into something when I was young," Evan said. "I'll never get out. Not clean. You still can."
"What about them?"
"I can handle them."
"You can't do that. No one can do that."
Evan just smiled. Human engineering had been part of Evan's training, no less than savate and marksmanship and endurance. He had been trained to disappear into a crowd and fire 3-inch clusters at 1,000 yards. He had been trained to intimidate, to make grown men afraid. He could convey breathtaking menace when he had to. So he just smiled. And that was enough. "You decide what you want," Evan said, "and call if you need me. 1-855-2-NOWHERE. Say it back to me." Javier said it back. Evan started for the door. He'd stepped over the stripped gun and set his hand on the doorknob when Javier spoke.
"This girl today. Her face."
Javier lowered his head.
"There's a point you cross where you can't get yourself back. Where you can't find, I don't know, redemption."
"Every choice holds redemption." Javier lifted his eyes to meet Evan's.
"You really believe that?"
Evan said, "I have to." 44. Running the same race. A half-drunk glass of milk rested on the kitchen island. Standing just inside his front door, keys still in hand, Evan stared across the open stretch of floor at it. There was filmy white residue up one side where Joey had sipped. He unlaced his boots and then crossed to the kitchen. He picked up the glass, It had left a circle of milk on his counter. Beside it, a pile of crumbs rested next to a torn-open box of water crackers. The inside bag was left open, the crackers exposed to the air, growing stale. What kind of feral creature ate like this? The rest of the world could be filthy and chaotic and lawless, but not in here. After scraping through the underside of society, Evan needed to return to order. He washed the glass by hand, dried it, and put it away. There was another glass missing from the cupboard, an empty spot leaving the left row incomplete. It occurred to him that two glasses had never been out of the cupboard at the same time. He nudged the clean glass into place, the set of six still down one soldier. Maybe she needed another glass upstairs. Maybe that's how people did things. Joey could have used more time with Jack. The second commandment, how you do anything is how you do everything. Evan put away the box of crackers, swept the crumbs into his hand, dumped them into the garbage disposal. He waved his hand beneath the Kohler Sensate touchless kitchen faucet, turning on the clean blade of water so he could run the disposal. There were smudges on the polished chrome. Who touched a touchless faucet? He cleaned off the smudges and then got out a sheet of waxed paper and used it to wipe down the chrome. It prevented water spots. When he was done, he sprayed and paper toweled the counter, washed his hands, got an ice cube for Vera, too, and headed across the great room and down the brief hall. The door to his bedroom was open. He didn't like open doors. The bedspread on his maglev floating bed was dimpled where someone had sat, and not bothered to smooth it back into place. The door to his bathroom was open. One of Joey's sweatshirts was tossed on the floor by the bath mat. One corner of the bath mat was flipped back. With a toe, he adjusted it. The shower door was rolled open. The hidden door to the vault left wide. He took five deep breaths before proceeding. "Joey," he said, stepping into the vault. "The milk glass." The sight inside the vault left his mouth dry. An adrenaline antihistamine reaction. Various monitors had been yanked off the wall and rearranged on the floor, data scrolling across them. The computer bays had been dissected, torn from their racks. Cables snaked between hardware, connecting everything by no evident design. Joey lay on her back like a car mechanic, wearing a tank top, her sleek arm muscles glistening with sweat. She was checking a cable connection. She rolled over and popped to her feet. "Check this shit out." "I am checking this shit out." Evan picked Vera 2 up off the floor, nestled an ice cube in her serrated spikes, and eyed her accusatorily. "I left you in charge." Joey breezed past him, using her bare foot to swivel a monitor on the floor so she could check the screen. The scent of girly soap tinged the air. Lilac and vanilla, anomalous here among the weapon lockers and electronic hum. She laced her fingers, inverted her hands, cracked the knuckles. "You were looking at a beautifully improvised machine learning system. 262,144 graphics cores devoted to a single cause, tracking down David Smith." Evan figured maybe he could forgive the milk. And the crumbs. And the smudges on the faucet. He set Vera 2 back on the sheet metal desk. She was now the only item in the vault, in the proper place. He looked at the open door to the vault, and the rolled back shower door beyond, and bit his lip. Managed the words. "Good job." She held up a hand, and they high-fived. "At least now you and Van Sciver? You're running the same race." 45. A bit more incentive.
Listening to all that gurgling and choking wore on a man. Van Sciver set down the water cooler jug of Arrowhead and wiped his brow. Enhanced interrogation.